Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Black and white. We all have a mix of naughty and nice. Poetry allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way into the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustments to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. Welcome! And Pam, you with me?
I am, yes. Hello, Babbler. How's it going?
I'm doing okay. I haven't had any. Don't know when it's
not
going
to
end.
Not too bad.
Good.
Yeah, but looks like a great lineup of poetry tonight.
Yeah, I think so. I'm starting off the show tonight with the contest that we got into a little bit at the end of last show, but not a whole lot, with Seo Jeongju. And And then we also have a poem from Ephesiana based on dreams. So tonight, would you mind putting up the poems that I have on the board, Pam? And I'll go ahead and give you up reading and comments. If that works
I
for you.
I would be happy to do that.
All right.
Jeez, I am excellent. All right. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put up the first poem and assign it to you. And then I'm going to hang up, but I'm going to pull back real quickly and hope that'll fix the problem. So up first we have Picking Dahlias by Bob Ballister. And go ahead, Babbler, and give that a read for us.
All right. Well, before I dig in, I'm going to go ahead and intro the contest so people understand what the inspiration was for the reads tonight. So the first set of poems that we're reading are from my contest, which is based on the Korean poet Seo Jeong-ju. So this was originally inspired because I was watching a Korean program called The Dictionary of Useless Knowledge, where they covered many different subjects ranging from literature, poetry, science, philosophy, and history briefly. They explored it in a conversational style between a group of experts from different backgrounds. I really enjoyed the show, and I felt like I learned a lot of interesting information on it. One of the topics they talked about was poetry. And poetry is kind of interesting when it crosses language barriers because there's so many aspects that can get lost or jostled in translation. Metaphor, idioms, rhyming, double meanings, cultural context. Every time I read a poem that's been translated, I think about what bits and pieces I'm maybe missing. And yet, I still feel like it's worth attempting to cross that bridge. There is a whole wealth of expression and ideas to expose ourselves to and to broaden our experience of people that I feel like it's worth seeing poetry through the lens of a translator to try to bridge that gap. For the series that I'm starting, starting by focusing on Asian poets one at a time, and maybe later I'll add other continents. So to start this off, I wanted to talk about the poet Seo Jeong-ju. He's considered the founding father of modern Korean poetry. Under the pen name Midang, he published at least 15 different collections of poetry and taught Korean literature at Chosun University. He was nominated 5 times for the Nobel Peace Prize in Literature. So pretty interesting guy. Worth looking up if you're interested. So I had posted a few different English translations of some of his works to inspire people. So that is what these first few reads that we're doing tonight are inspired by. So the one that Pam has put up on the board is Picking Dahlias by Bob Ballister. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. To choose from all these dahlias, one to pick, to rise within our walls like sun without, bringing colors to our senses through the day, before the evening with its petals falls. End poem. Pam, I don't know if you're back there, but if you are,
I am. Oh, man, and the echoing is still happening. This is going to drive me crazy. Okay, but Wait, I think it's gone. Okay. But yes, wonderful read there. A great write by Bob Ballister. You know, I like how, although, you know, not an exact form, how the minimalism of the form reflects very well what you would consider like an oriental a form of poetry, you know, like with the use of nature language and the simple, straightforward language and the idea of, you know, the, you know, just minimizing how many words there are. I like how the dahlias, like most flowers, represent, you know, a feminine form, or, you know, but here it really speaks on the whole idea of the beauty of nature and the beauty of diversity, you know, especially in lines like bringing color to our senses through the day before the evening with its petals falls. So excellent write and very well done. Oh no, I was talking to myself. Well, shoot. Okay. You know, that was funny because I kept thinking as I was talking, I would almost pause and I thought, because normally I hear a little bit of like noises, nothing like major, but just enough to let me know you're there. And I'm like, gee, it's awfully quiet. And maybe I should ask if she's still there. But no, I just kept on talking.
Yeah, I got dropped just as you started commenting, but I called right back. I didn't hear some of your comments, so I apologize if any of it is redundant. I did really enjoy this brevity. I thought it was wistfully beautiful. I thought it captured that kind of impressionist quality that exists in Jiangsu's work. But, you know, it paints a really nice picture in four little lines, you know, to choose from all these dahlias. So you instantly see like a large field or maybe many bouquets of dahlias to rise within our walls like sun without, you know, and I picture, you know, the sun as a dahlia, which is like this really big flower. Well, not always, but when I picture dahlias, I picture dinner plate dahlias, which are huge. You know, and if you have a yellow one or something like that, it really can kind of resemble the sun. So to like bring a little bit of the sun inside, I thought was a really nice concept. You know, bringing colors to our senses through the day for the evening with its petals falls. So then to retie the flower again into the sense of daytime, you know, falling petals, like a wilting flower is like the sun setting. I thought there was just gorgeous imagery tucked into this piece. So I thought it was a really great brevity. And it just paints a beautiful picture. So thank you, Bob, for this piece. What do we have up next, Pam?
All right, up next we have Yesterday by S. Sharp, and it goes like this. Yesterday the swan swam, placid lake, where summer stitched a cloudless sky over the midnight black horizon. Mountains meet, oceans tease, sailing slowly down, peaceful breeze, the artist's brush still wet. I will now never need to leave yesterday, never, ever forget. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And again, this is just paint such beautiful imagery. I will say, my brain sometimes starts pieces off in weird places that is unrelated to the poem. It has nothing to do with the poem, more to do with me being a weirdo that I am and proud of it. That's not an insult. But when I read Yesterday the Swan Swam, I for some reason was like, I totally read it as swam ah. I don't know why. And I read it that way like three times. Yesterday the swan swam ah. Weird. But I can picture this beautiful lake that's got swans on it and is mostly flat and reflective, probably a little bit of rippling from the swans, where summer stitch a cloudless sky over the midnight black horizon. And it makes me think of looking out on a lake when you have that really placid water, how the horizon line really does get pretty dark
and inky on the edge of the lake water. Mountain meet ocean's tease, sailing slowly down, peaceful breeze. And then you get to this part where the artist's brush is still wet. So, you know, committing this to memory, you know, maybe actually painting it, but also just, you know, you can almost just paint things in your mind. You know, you see beautiful things all the time, but sometimes you stop and actually commit them to memory. You actually take a stop in a moment and be like, this is gorgeous, and I want to remember it exactly as it is. I will now never need to leave yesterday, never, ever forget. You know, I picture a beautiful pastoral piece that memorializes a time and a day. This is just a really gorgeous brevity. I do also think of, you know, now I think it's so much more common for everyone to have cameras on them all the time that we see a lot more of these images. You know, even when it was like disposable cameras that people carried around, you know, you have like 24 pictures and that's all you can take today. You know, you didn't get as many. And then even before that, before photography, like the best you had was paintings. You know, it makes me think of like how many sunsets were never memorialized. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was wistfully picturesque. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, yeah, this has lovely imagery. And I do like how it is that idea of capturing a memory. And I did get the impression that it was told from the point of view of the artist who is in the moment painting the picture and realizes the value of the moment, but also realizes the value of capturing it so that it becomes a memory that's stained. And like I said, lovely imagery, wonderful brevity. You know, I really like mountains meet ocean's tease. I thought ocean's tease especially added to like the kind of central motion you see in like gentle waves of water, and personifies the water, the waves, the playfulness of it all. And so just excellent write and very well done.
I like what you had to say. Yeah, they really did have some really great verb choices in here. You know, they could have gone with a much more simplistic verb, but it would have made it like a much less dynamic poem. You know, summer stitched, not, you know, where summer put together a cloudless sky, you know, it doesn't quite have the same feel, you know, ocean's tease, you know, there's really great verb choices in here that make this piece. Yeah. Excellent comment. Where are we off to?
All right. Up next, we have More or Less by Opti, and go ahead, Babbler, and give that a read for us, please.
All right, More or Less, Opti. All the words in all the world become meaningless upon that impending end, that death that beckons us all, poetry. More or less is nothingness, joined together forever. Within that brew of creativity is that inevitable, soulless and soulful, thoughtless and thoughtful, negatively and positively, wrongfully right. End poem. Pam, you want to start us off with your thoughts?
Yes, I would be happy to. Wonderful read there. I like how this speaks on the importance of poetry and the how it adds such depth, you know, because you know, of course, I don't literally think language would be meaningless without poetry, but I do think that, you know, it just wouldn't be as beautiful. I really like within that, I like it all the way through because like the other two brevities before it, it's difficult to separate any one part. It's a very thoughtful write, and I especially like within that brew of creativity that is inevitably soulless and soulful, thoughtless and thoughtful. I really like how that reminds us that it's not the words themselves that have the thought, that have the soul, but rather the poet behind it. And so excellent write and very well done.
A great comment. The poet behind it is the meaning. I agree with that. Oh, when I'm reading this, it's funny, when I read more or less, you know, this is a pretty short poem, so it's less, but it manages, sometimes brevities manage to say more. And all the words in the world become meaningless. Well, I don't know about meaningless, but probably emotionless. You know, I think of poetry as a format in which to convey emotion, you know, to hint at deeper meanings while using commonplace words, at least for me. You know, that's how I view poetry. If nothing was ever implied, if there were no metaphors, if there were no similes, if you could only speak in direct factual language, it'd probably be a lot less interesting to read. But the idea that it is inevitably soulless and soulful, thoughtless and thoughtful. I particularly like thoughtless and thoughtful because some of my best poetry, in my own personal opinion, is the stuff that I write on the fly. Stuff that it's not like I have a plan for. I just sit down at the keyboard and just write and just let it all come out. And then as I read over it, I might tweak it a little bit. But it's mostly thoughtful, like thoughtless. But then when I read it, it's like some of, I think, my most interesting writes because it's more of a pure thought, if that makes sense. So I really like those next to each other like that, you know. Negatively and positively, wrongfully right, you know, the double meanings of things. I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a nice brevity and contradiction in how they work together. So thank you, Opti. Wonderful write. What's loaded up next, ma'am?
All right. Up next, we have Womb Soul Desire by Captain Kerr, and it goes like this. Rocked in a manger of stars, sung blue nebula lullabies, cradled by plasmid ore, molten down, and fitted to golden-hilted brand, cooled in fountains of the dark estate, slung on the shoulder of robin song, drawn by butterfly breath, emerging womb screams in liquefrescence, garnering scent of home oak, bathed in bruised flesh of currant and gooseberry, shimmering, wielding unsheathed observance, white garb, perfumed puffs of purloined dandelion skiffs off cherub cheeks, in raw elemental awakening. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I really liked this piece. It really took like the natural aspect, like nature, and puts it into like a really kind of gritty and raw place, you know, of being born into something, being made of natural things. And not all natural things are like light and beautiful, you know. I think a lot of like nature documentaries where it's like you see the coyote going after the rabbit and you know what's going to happen, and it's not like sweet and soft, but it's natural, you know. So I read rocked in a manger of stars, sung blue nebula lullabies, cradled by plasmid ore. You know, it's like, oh, well, there's kind of the softer, more beautiful side. But then you get into molten down, you know, pooled in fountains of the dark estate. You know, you start to get a little more of that grittier side of nature, the more real feeling, in my opinion. You know, emerging wound screams in liquefied prescience. You know, I thought it was rather beautifully rawly natural feeling, bathed in bruised flesh of currant and gooseberry, shimmering, wielding unsheathed observance. It's like childbirth is gorgeous, it really, you know, but it's also brutal. You know, it's, there's a raw naturalness to it. So I really enjoyed this. I felt like it was not picturesquely nature, you know, but at the same time, gorgeously worded. I also thought it was interesting, you know, the white-garbed, perfumed puffs of purloined dandelion. It's like I picture, you know, the dandelion heads, and yet I don't particularly enjoy the smell of dandelions. They've always kind of smelled a little bit like dog to me. Like, it's a kind of strong pollen scent if you really get in there and smell a dandelion. But, you know, the white puffs are so pretty. You know, it just is funny when I read, like, perfumed puff, and then I get to dandelion, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of like, maybe not my most favorite smell, but I can still smell it. It still pulls to memory. And again, it has that, you know, it's natural, but not necessarily soft. So I really liked this piece. It felt very forested. So what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really like this too. And I have to agree with you that it is raw and gritty. And I like how it talks on the process of creation, and how, you know, it's not always beautiful, and uses nature imagery and uses birth as a process of creation in the moment. You know, to me, I like that it can be taken literally or even metaphorically in the idea. I kind of got the thought myself of the idea of the, and I don't know where it came from, but I kind of thought of the idea of a metaphor for that love that's created, and you know, the different steps to lead us to that person, or even maybe a motherly love at the birth of a child. Definitely some strong imagery here, and yes, there are, we anyone who's watched nature shows with like you said, the fox chasing the hare, or any other hunter versus prey, you definitely know that nature is not always beautiful. I really particularly like bathed in bruised flesh of currant and gooseberry, shimmering, wielding, unsheathed observance. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Agreed. It really feels like it speaks on, like, the brutality of birth. I like it a lot. What do we have up next?
All right. Well, let me go ahead and grab the next one. And let's see here. I read Captain Kirk. So, All right. Then let me grab the next one. And up next, I have your poem, Babbler. So go ahead and give it a read for us.
This is Carnations. This smile is a patchwork of slow dance solos spun out against the wall of a middle school gym, lips stained red from eyes dried out, hunting faces at in a 4 a.m. ceiling. Laughter composed in stolen notes passed under a teacher's nose, scrawled in Sharpie, circling no over yes or maybe. Kisses pressed from flower petals, tugged out of blossoms, full of love-me-nots and odd numbers, prank calls and spun bottles, 7 minutes in silence. Drive thumbs into my wrists, yanking me across the dance floor. Leave a corsage to remind me that my pulse blooms beneath purple carnations. End poem.
Wonderful read, Babbler. And, you know, I really like how with not a lot of words, you know, not a particularly long write, you've captured such a nostalgic coming-of-age write, you know, that takes us back in time to those prank calls and spun bottles, you know, those, hunting faces in a 4 a.m. ceiling is really relatable, not only because it's something I've done myself, but because to me it's one of those lines that brings emotion in without using any words that, you know, like use emotion words, because, you know, you just imagine, at least I do, you know, the kind of anxiety or whatever that keeps you up at 4 a.m., and a mind that's too busy to fall asleep trying to find those faces in the ceiling. I really like this all the way through, but especially laughter composed in stolen notes passed under a teacher's nose, scrawled in Sharpie, circling no over yes or maybe. And I feel like that represents not only, you know, looking back at, you know, the self-discovery and, you know, the discovery of our emotions towards other people and the answering of the, you know, the question of, you know, what does the future hold for us, even if it's only that we're daydreaming that in that moment, you know, are we going to be going on a date or would we want to kiss this person, you know? And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's definitely a nostalgia write. I wrote this one because a lot of this poet's works, for some reason, involve flowers. They always kind of seem to pull up, you know, lots of floral references in his works. But yeah, it is that kind of nostalgia, too. You know, I grew up, I'm a child of the 90s, you know, born in the 80s, but grew up in the 90s, early 2000s. And it's weird how much the world has changed. You know, I sometimes wonder how many of these experiences that I feel like were multi-generational don't exist anymore with the advent of technology. You know, now that kids have cell phones and tablets and computers and all of these things that they didn't really have growing up, I wonder sometimes, you know, like, are they still passing notes in class? Do they just send texts? You know, they still fold those little pieces of paper to make those little, you know, finger games? Or is it just all on, you know, Instagram these days, you know? You know, how much of these things actually happen? I don't know. Like, do kids still make prank calls? I mean, it'd probably be easier to make prank calls, but there's also, like, caller ID straight up on your phone these days. It's like, you know, it's a lot harder to get rid of it. They probably don't even know what, like, star 69 is. You know? Like, it's not really the same. I just kind of wonder sometimes, like, how different childhood looks like. Because I feel like this version of growing up is the version that existed for kids who grew up in the 80s, maybe even the 70s. You know, like, those are things that I think were fairly universal experiences for quite some time, that there's, like, a kind of demarcated change in. That's kind of what I was thinking about when I wrote it. Anyway, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, and yeah, you're right, because I was born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s and early 90s, and, you know, it really is quite different. And you know, though, that game with the fingers and the folded piece of paper, they probably have a freaking app for that nowadays.
Right? MASH is just like a filter on Instagram now. You don't have to bring out like the notebook paper and numbers or anything.
Right? Exactly. Oh my gosh. Yep. Times have changed, that's for sure.
Oh. All right. I think there's one more for this contest, right, Pam?
There is, yes. And it is Ancient Verse by Guilty. Parched lips part, enunciate words rarely heard in modern terms. Seas parted, thunder roared to a mouse squeak. Rivers retreated, I heard. Man listened, animals sung in rhapsody to flowers standing prone. All for the wind. End poem.
Great read, Pam. This is a really kind of powerful brevity. You just start with parched lips part, enunciate words rarely heard in modern terms. Has a really great rhythm to it. It is also words that call for distinct enunciation. We can't really mumble those. So I thought it was a really effective way to open this, you know, and then to take in that middle stanza, kind of that a contrarian kind of thing, you know, thunder roared to a mouse squeak, you know, like it's just all this noise stuffed into this tiny sound, you know, and that all of these animals and all of these noises and all of these natural things that are existing so vividly and brightly and loudly go undocumented. You know, it's not, you know, it's a show for the wind. You know, it's a moment in time. It's a loud existence that passes in the blink of an eye. I really thought it was, you know, the poetry of natural things. So I thought this was really well done. The language is really strong. I also really appreciate the places where the lines are broken and where the commas are. I think it gives the words a weightier feeling and an interesting cadence. So I actually really enjoyed this brevity. I thought it was beautifully done. And it feels weighty. So I liked it. Pam, what did you think?
I really like this all the way through. It is, as you said, it's a powerful brevity. Even the title, Ancient Verse, reminds us of when it comes to nature, there's so much history behind it, so much that, you know, of our the past of humanity and even before humanity. I really particularly like that second stanza, seas parted, thunders roared, to a mouse squeak, rivers retreated, I heard. And it reminds us that there's music everywhere, from the loudest to the smallest sound, and that, you know, the way that it all blends together. And I like how the end line, all for the wind, reminds us of the power of the wind, you know, which in itself is invisible with no form and yet, you know, carries with it the so much influence of power. So wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, I really liked it. Yeah, I guess I just keep reading it and thinking powerful, which I guess, you know, that's a good thing, right?
Definitely.
Oh. Great comment, Pam. I think that closes up that contest, which brings us to our next contest, which was put up by Athasiana. So Athasiana is not here at the moment because she hasn't been feeling well. So the poem she put up, the contest, is titled Dreams. She said that she was lost in fever dreams, and sometimes in her dreams she is not herself, and she experiences being another person, character, or version of herself. So she asked, who are you in your dreams? Write a poem about it. So that was the prompt for this contest.
which I thought was a really interesting and wonderfully open-ended piece to give us as inspiration. So, with that said, what do we have up?
All right. Well, up next we have The Transformation by Scraps and Scribbles. And go ahead, Babbler, and give that a read for us, please.
All right. The Transformation, Scraps and Scribbles. If I could drink my perfect self from your strange potion there and be just who I would, the choice, my friend, is easy, not a chore. It's Sherlock Holmes I'd be, but if I could. His insight, instinct, confidence in ways, I could be reckless, cold, and bold, and daring. No detail in a case escape my gaze. I'd keep alone in logic, cool, uncaring. I'd brood away for days in pipe smoke fumes, escape the boredom, kiss from my syringe, play games with Moriarty, betting doom, and feel the pulse of London cry or sing. I'd be myself alone and self-contained, my friends, the crime, the case, the woman, and cocaine. What do you think, Pam?
I enjoyed this one, and I like how it answers the question. You know, like, who are you in your dreams? There was a great pre-write to put into the contest, you know, and I like that he brings in this familiar character. I actually didn't know, because I never, you know, actually read the books until I was watching Jeopardy the other day, that in the books, Sherlock Holmes says elementary, but he never says elementary, dear Watson. Like, that didn't come about until, like, the movies or TV shows. But I really like how this, you know, goes, you know, kind of like the idea of idolizing a character and wishing we had that same ability, you know, to be logic, cool, uncaring, I'll brood away for days and pipe smoke fumes. You know, and then the, of course, the dark twist at the end, that but the end to me is that moment when you wake up and, you know, realize that maybe it wouldn't be so great to be this character. Maybe it wouldn't be so great to live that life. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I like what you had to say. And, you know, I'd heard that before about Sherlock Holmes. There's so many interesting lines in movies that get shifted like that, where it's just like what people think should have been said, what kind of almost sounds like what should have been said but wasn't. You know, like, Luke, I am your father. That line also never happens. You know, like, that's not how that goes. So it's just kind of interesting how things happen. I did really like this piece, too. I thought it, you know, it really kind of captured the feeling of Sherlock Holmes. You know, if you could be anybody, you'd be Sherlock Holmes, which I thought is interesting because, yeah, he's brilliant, but he's also kind of an asshole. Like, you know, like, it's not like you've got some warm and wonderful personality. Like, Sherlock Holmes is a cold dick. And yet that's also, you know, what they like about him. You know, they know that. They're like, he could be reckless, cold, you know, keep alone in logic, cool, uncaring. So, like, they know that he's kind of a cold shoulder. And it's interesting that they like that about him, you know, the unfeeling edge. And then yet, yeah, I don't know. You know, is that who they want to be? You know, that they do, But then they're friends. It's like Watson isn't even mentioned. It's like Sherlock Holmes' best friends are crime, the case, the woman, and cocaine. You know, and I don't know if cocaine is supposed to be like the element of the case that he's solving, or if we've got Sherlock Holmes doing lines. You know, like I don't know.
I wondered the same thing myself.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know if he's trying to solve a drug case or if, like, that's what's keeping him so alert. I don't know. But I don't mind that it's a mystery. I thought it was interesting, too. I'm pretty sure this is a sonnet, which I thought was a classic kind of poetry format to choose for this. So, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought there was a good sense of humor. I did find it interesting, too, that for a pre-write, it was such a direct response to the prompt. So I thought that was nicely impressive. So I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. So what do we have up next?
Apparently, if you search Sherlock Holmes and cocaine, you can actually come across some articles on his use of cocaine and opium.
Oh, all right. So it is Sherlock there doing some illicit substances.
Some recreational. You never hear about that. Too funny.
That's interesting. I like that. Oh, my God. I don't think I ever would have randomly Googled Sherlock Holmes and cocaine. Like, I'm prompting because of search terms that never would have come together in my daily existence.
You know what? Honestly, it wouldn't. I would have to have read it in a poem like this first or somewhere else or seen it on Jeopardy. Because for me just to go, I wonder if Sherlock Holmes ever, well, because he is such a low-key character most of the time, it seems like, at least from what you see in the movies, that you just can't imagine.
Opium makes some sense. I mean, he's always got a pipe going on. He does seem kind of chill.
I could totally see the opium. Yes, definitely.
Mixing his uppers and downers, I guess.
Yeah, right?
Maybe that's why he's such a dick. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, right? Probably. Oh, too funny. All right, well, up next, we have The Dream of Picasso, Don Quixote, and the Windmill in the Pit of Despair. And it goes like this. Oh, and by Patty Mike. I once had a dream where Picasso painted me like one of his asymmetrical French girls. I was pretty, very sexy, the most erotic experience ever conceived, even if my boobs did look like a pixelated Lara Croft. Think that they poked his eyes out, and while he was blinded by my science, Sir Don Quixote rode in on his noble steed. I was swept up into his arms, rescuing me from the giant windmill in the pit of despair. I dare not convey, but oh, I am daring to say that it was inconceivable. Now, all of this could have happened indeed. 'Tis, as I had said in the beginning of my poem, it was, after all, just a dream and poem.
Great read, Pam. And I really love this write. It's so wonderfully weird. You know, the once had a dream where Picasso painted me like one of his asymmetrical French girls. You know, I picture like his cubism paintings. you know, they were like, body parts are not where they're supposed to be, you know, like, yeah, they're nudes, but it's very impressionistic. It's not really, you know, the sensual style that you'd picture, you know, which, you know, maybe be like a Renaissance style or Rubenesque or, you know, like that kind of romanticized nude, you know, it's like angular. And then they double down in that, you know, it's pretty, very sexy and the most, oh, okay, well, it's a sexy nude. But then it says, even if my boobs looked like a pixelated Lara Croft, which, you know, I think of the Tomb Raider video games, like for the N64. Well, I don't think it was the N64. I never played that one in particular. I think Xbox. But her boobs were these massive triangles. Like, it was almost a joke. Like, it's just like these massive breasts, and I don't know why. So it brings me right back to those games, the Tomb Raider games that were really popular when I was late middle school, early high school, maybe, which was kind of comical because it really is almost Picasso-like, the proportions that they gave her. And then to, you know, I think they poked his eyes out. And then while he was blinded by my science, you know, which makes me think of Weird Science, which again is nostalgic, you know, the, whether you saw the movie or the TV show, you know, it's like those two kind of nerdy guys who basically make a holographic girlfriend. You know, again, it's kind of pixelated. It kind of falls in that same line of, like, fictionally attractive, which I thought was an interesting tie-in to bring in here. You know, and then you've got Don Quixote, which, again, you know, we're talking about, like, a fantasy era, you know. It's like, make-believe. It all falls under, like, this not real. It's very surreal. Swept up into his arms, rescuing me from the giant windmill in the pit of despair. You know, to be saved, saved from the guy that you poked his eye out with your giant pixelated boobs after you were painted by Picasso. It's such a fascinating and interesting story, and it is dreamlike in that it doesn't exactly quite make sense, you know, like... And then when you get to the line inconceivable, I instantly think of Princess Bride, you know, where that line is brought up repeatedly, you know, inconceivable, which again brings me into like nostalgia. And again, it's like a fantasy princess story. So, you know, it's just wonderfully interwoven with all of these different cross-references and thoughts, you know, and then again at the end they remind you, like, none of this actually happened. It's a weird dream I had. And yet what a fun dream to be, like, this, like, impressionistic, malproportioned, angular, sexy nude, you know, running from all these fantasy scenarios. It sounds like a good dream. I'll have what she's having. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. Oh my gosh, I love this. It's delightfully weird. Love all the references, you know. And it's funny with and I'm not a big video game player myself. Never have been, but of course everybody knows what the Lara Croft from the you know, video games looks like. And yeah, you had to look at her and wonder how this woman wasn't, you know, wearing a sports bra and managing not to, like, bounce as she was running, you know. It's just a unrealistic expectation. But, yeah, so much of this had me smiling, you know, the most erotic experience ever conceived, even if my boobs did look like a pixelated Lara Croft. And even using the word inconceivable to give a nod to you know, Princess Bride. And yeah, I actually had the movie Weird Science on VHS tape many years ago. And but yeah, I like how he wraps this up, because it reminds us, that, you know, because were this to be reality, yeah, none of this would be, you know, conceivable. This wouldn't be a reality, you know, this wouldn't be possible. But, you know, looking at it from the perspective of realizing that it was a dream, changes the point of view. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I love just how surreal it was. It kept that, it was very humorous with a lot of dreamlike qualities. Very well done. I don't remember much of Weird Science. It was like a little bit before my era. I mostly remember the theme song, but I did watch it. Like, I do remember it. But I was pretty little.
Yeah.
So, like, for most of the humor was, like, that kind of pervy teenage boy 80s humor that I didn't really, you know, as a little kid. As like an 8-year-old, I'm not like, oh, I get that.
Well, the funny thing about it was because, you know, it was made in a time where, you know, like nowadays you could almost see something like that happening, like us having the technology or being real close to having the technology to do that. But during that movie, they had like, you remember the really big personal computers from the 1980s that were like these, I mean, like, they took one of those, a lightning storm, and I can't remember, and a magazine. They attached, and a magazine, and they created a woman. And so right away, the whole concept is just absolutely cheesy. But, you know, it was fun.
Isn't that the made that era of, like, 80s, though? Like, I don't know. I particularly enjoy the ridiculousness of 80s sci-fi, where it's just a lot of times so out there that it's like to try and explain what's going on, you sound ridiculous, you know? Like if you really try to explain the plot of like Back to the Future, you just sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, or, oh gosh, I can never remember the name of that other show from the 80s, the time travel one, where he's going
Quantum
back
Leap.
In time. Yes, Quantum Leap. Explaining the plot of Quantum Leap and how that works. Like, there's no way to do that without just sounding ridiculous, but that's, I think, half the charm. You know, there's always some ridiculous lightning bolt or something absurd. To make it possible.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And yeah, a lot of those 80s. Like, well, I remember about 10 or so years back when my oldest two were young teenagers, I wanted them to watch Knight Rider with me on Netflix. And I was telling them, I preempted it with the other, like how super cool Knight Rider was. And about like 15 minutes into the show, my son turns to me and goes, really, Mom? You thought this was cool?
It was cool at the time. You know,
and
that
I realized
cool aviator sunglasses.
It wasn't as fully remembered.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, the idea of what's cool has changed a bit.
It really has.
I will tell you, I will take men's short shorts, mustaches, and aviator sunglasses 100 times over, though, before I'm down with showing your underwear.
Definition
of cool. I did laugh the other day because I saw was it American Eagle catalog, and on the front they had the guy wearing polo shirt with two popped collars, and I'm like, oh god, not this. That was so cool when I was like when I was in high school, but I always thought it was the stupidest looking thing even then, and now that I am older, it's coming back. I'm like, no, not that. Of all the trends, we're going back to that. No.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, I guess back on topic. Where are we going next, Pam?
up next, we have Lucid Horizons by Blues Man. And go ahead, Babbler, and give that a read, please.
All right. Lucid Horizons by Blues Man. Shallow breaths come rapidly on a lucid event horizon of a transcendental technicolor pastel dream. In birth cries whirlwind, my eyes open within quiet calm at the center of a flaming tornado. Enraptured and enthralled, I am enveloped in the innocent purity of soulmates' intertwined eternity. My eyes wander to a space no longer empty, for it is filled with the essence of my love that is you. I peer through the cool heat of the spiritual fire that blankets me. Ever am I drawn to your pillar of flame. With the last seconds of sleep, our twin tornadoes blend into an explosion of immaculate conception as our ethereal silver cords become more tightly bound. We awaken with a smile that we shared in a dream. End poem.
What, well, first of all, wonderful read there. I really liked this one. I liked that it had a bit more of a serious tone and went into the idea of lucid dreaming, the idea of how we... the idea of controlling your dreams and the idea of connecting with another person in your dreams. I really like that photography, very dark and surreal looking that he has attached to his poem. Wonderful imagery in this, enraptured and enthralled. I am enveloped in the innocent purity of soulmates intertwined eternally. My eyes wander to a space no longer empty, for it is filled the essence of my love that is you. I like how this takes us through that dream and then into that moment of waking up and realizing that you were there connected together. A great, great delicate use of alliteration and very well done.
Yeah, I like what you had to say. It is a little more romantic, and yet it feels like seriously romantic. You know, I don't mean like seriously romantic, but like there's kind of a serious tone to it. Like it's a heavier weight. Yeah, and to take this connection on dreams, I really liked the concept of being within the quiet calm at the center of a flaming tornado. What a horrifying and high-energy thing a flaming tornado is, and yet a wonderful stand-in for the idea of passion, the heat, you know, all of that aspect of love. And yet you're the calm center, the quiet calm of it in the eye of that storm. To be in the still moment. Now, I've never been in a tornado, thank goodness. But one time I was driving cross country and I experienced some really weird weather that I feel like may have eventually become a tornado. The air was just weirdly still, and it was 11 p.m., but looked like the middle of the day, and the sky was red. Like, it was the weirdest weather I'd ever seen, and I was driving through the Midwest, and we definitely drove through, a lot of lightning and thunder and heavy rain, and then this, and then more lightning and thunder and rain. So I'm like, I wonder if that tightens up and becomes a tornado. But it was eerie feeling. Like, it felt creepy to be in the middle of that. But to put a positive spin on it, you know, I can see how that quiet calm, it definitely holds energy. Like, it's intense. So enraptured and enthralled, being enveloped by the innocent purity of soulmates, you know, just kind of hushed in it, like to feel something intensely quiet. And it's true. When you've experienced like something that's really quiet, like really quiet, there is a tension to it. Especially, you know, I grew up out in the woods, and so I'm used to like frog noises and various wildlife sounds at night, unless there's a predator nearby, and then all of a sudden everything gets like too quiet. And you're not even really aware of the noise until all of a sudden there's no noise, and then you're very aware of the noise. So I can see that as like a tension, like a tenseness to being in the eye of the storm, you know, and to call it again a spiritual fire. Ever am I drawn to your pillar of flame, but to find the quiet in that, and then to wake up at the end and still have that person around, you know, we awaken with a smile that we shared in our dream, you know, a shared dream. About being soulmates. That's a pretty cool thing. So I really enjoyed this piece. It was very intense, and it felt in some ways very serious. So I liked it. I thought it was a great write. Thanks, Blues Man.
Absolutely. I have to say this is a great idea for a topic by Afasiana. And I had to, you know, I feel bad that she doesn't feel well, and I hope she feels better soon. But I did have to smile when I read her contest and how she came up with the idea. I thought, well, hey, that actually worked really well.
Kind of out of it.
All right. Well. Up next, we have A Dream of Peace by Marvin Goldfarb. When Moshe and Abdullah can sit down and break bread, when Catholics and Protestants can do together what they dread, each black and white are treated as best as one can, and together work out a brotherly plan. When all of these things can be done in a spirit of love, harmony, and make it be fun, then we will know the true meaning of peace, and nothing more needs to be said. End poem.
Great read, Kim. I love this concept on dreaming, you know, the dream of equality. It's, unfortunately, in my... I don't know that I'm pessimistic necessarily. I consider myself a realist, but I guess some people may see that as pessimism. You know, I think it's idealistic. You know, I don't think it's achievable, but I think it's worth attempting. You know, get as close as you can. I guess I think of it like in terms of mathematics, you know, calculus, the limit, you know, the number that you never achieve but can infinitely approach. And the closer you get, the better. You know, when Catholics and Protestants can do together what they dread, you know, it's just like this coming together, the setting aside of differences, each black and white are treated as best one can, and together work out a brotherly plan. You know, when you can just make things more equitable, you know. I do find it interesting that there's a, you know, rhyme scheme throughout this. We've got bread, dread, can, plan, done, fun. And the last two lines don't rhyme. You know, when we will know the, then we will know the true meaning of peace, and nothing more needs to be said. I think it gives those lines more weight because they break the rhyme scheme. You know, they don't fit, you know, that pace that had been set before. And it's I think emphasizes, you know, this is the point in a way. So I really liked this. You know, I thought it was simple, but very direct, very to the point, you know, and I think, in a, you know, a good thing worth working for, equality. So, well then, Marvin, what did you think, Pam?
You know, I thought this was lovely, and I have to agree with you about the rhyme scheme and scheme, there we go, sorry. And the breaking off from it did add more weight to those words because it was more important to say the words than to fit it into the rhyme. And I like the thought of world peace and harmony, but like you, you know, I think it's something that, you know, is nice to try to achieve, but isn't necessarily realistic, you know. You know, I like that he starts out with the two prophets, you know, the prophet Moses and the prophet Abdullah, and, you know, from different religions. I thought that was a great way to start the poem out as a representation of those of the different religions. And yeah, that's just it's a heartfelt write on the idea of dreaming of that spirit of love and harmony. So excellent write and very well done.
It's just such a universal theme. It's simple but beautiful. What do we have up next, Pam?
All right. Well, we're going from dreaming of world peace to dreaming about getting a piece. Because we have, I know, wasn't that a great lead-in?
It was wonderful. Slightly different spelling, but wonderful.
Right. So we have The Naughty Daydream by Teresa Strejnikoff. And go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
All right, The Naughty Daydream. Kiss me hard and grab my face. Mouth is watering, body getting tingly, heart beating rapidly, sweat dripping off my nose. Piece by piece, we begin to remove each other's clothes, stopping at our underwear. There is a pondering stare. Should we go on or should we stop here? I've never been a quitter. Now removing the last few pieces of clothing, we climb into the bed, kissing me from bottom to top, making some stops in between. Muscles tighten, toes curling. Don't stop now. I'm going to erupt. End poem.
Great read there, Babbler. I have to say, I like the humor in I've never been a quitter. I like the straightforward style and how she's speaks on a almost taboo subject, because, you know, I think we talk about, you know, sex and, you know, but not necessarily does it come up in conversation too much about, you know, daydreaming about, you know, or fantasizing about sexual encounters. Like I said, wonderful, straightforward style. I like that this has a kind of a sexiness to it, but it's also that really just raw reality of sex and making out, like, you know, let's face it, sweat dripping off the nose, not sexy. Even the lines where it says, stopping at our underwear, there's a pondering stare. Should we go on? Like, I've never had a fantasy where in my fantasy we stop. Like, we get down to our underwear, we stop and stare at each other and, like, what should we do from here? In my fantasies, we always know what we're supposed to be doing from there. But, yeah, excellent write and cleverly written. Very well done.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm like, a daydream, huh? So this is a fantasy, and we're fantasizing about being naked. almost naked. Yeah, be stopping at our underwear. Like, that one got me. I'm like, okay, so my fantasy daydream, things are really hot and heavy, and then we get down to the underwear, and I'm like, wait a minute. Should I keep thinking about this? You know what I mean? Like, who are you fantasizing about that you're like giving yourself pause about whether you should continue this train of thought here? But you know, it's kind of fun. You know?
It is.
It's like, oh, it's hot and heavy, and then wait a minute. Okay, yeah. Like, enjoy that there's like some breaks in the middle of your daydream. You know, I also thought it was really interesting, you know, the kissing me from bottom to top. Not top to bottom, bottom to top. That's an interesting direction to go. I don't know that I want someone to like start at my feet. You know, like, you're gonna do that. Like, let's. I guess if you're into feet, I'm just not one of those people. But I read it, I'm like, no, let's not start from bottom to top. Let's go top down here. I guess that's just me. I don't know. It's your fantasy, I guess. But I do enjoy it. It is like. It is a wonderful piece of, like, oh, gosh, you know, like, sensual, like, erotic, you know, poetry. There's nothing horribly graphic in this, you know what I mean? It's not, like, smut. Like, there's nothing in here that's like, oh, my God, I can't believe I read that. There's not, like, you know, five lines of overly descriptive language. You know, it is just, it does feel naughty, so... I really liked it.
Yes,
I did find it comedic, though. Yeah, it doesn't cross any lines. Like, I don't feel like I was just subjected to, like, okay, I didn't need that much detail of your daydream. You can keep that bit to yourself. It didn't cross that. So it was flirty. It was, you know, a little bit racy, but fun. And I did enjoy that weird break in the middle of, like, stopping to stare. Like, wait a minute. It was just, I don't know why it struck me as so comedic, but it really did.
Oh man. And that's the thing, like, if it was not a daydream, like, it would just be one of those awkward moments. Like if that were to happen in reality, I would feel very uncomfortable. I'd be like, what's going on here?
Do I have most of my clothes off to have second thoughts? Like, geez. Should I turn the lights off or something? Like,
yep, that's exactly what I'd be thinking.
You're not that great either, okay? Even in my daydreams,
God.
I'm at best a 7.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny when you can't even daydream yourself into being a super sexy pinup model. Just like, I know, and I'm the same way. I know the reality of it. Anywhere between a 5 and a 7.
Wait a minute, am I hot enough for this? Oh, screw it.
Oh my goodness.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. That was a fun read.
It was. All right. Up next, we have A Beloved Cameo by Randa Yazri. And it goes like this. Dark halls light out of my front porch, gazing with ever-increasing amability. The sky pins the bead brooch Luna to her lapel dress with silhouetted avian print, giving her a peak-sharp look. Sleepy forest richly ornates in an artistic work, wrapping in soft grass fabric, donning bandana trees around her head and swan bangles to liven up her outfit night. Blessed by a cameo memory of my family unlocking the door to happiness, promising to take me home. A muddy mind is excited to accept the invitation. Dreams eagerly pack their bags for the blithe trip in anticipation of glimpsing nostalgia's first rays of sunshine. End poem.
Wonderful read. This piece is interesting. You know, dark halls light out of my front porch. You know, so it's like the dark is pulling light. And so that was a really interesting way to open this piece, you know, and to be like gazing out on this scenery and to make everything into like an article of clothing or an embellishment of some sort. You know, the sky pins the bead brooch Luna. So the moon is a brooch, you know, and the sky is wearing a lapel dress in an avian print. Like, to make all of these things into, like, these articles, when it's, you know, a scenery. You know, sleepy forest richly ornates in an artistic work, wrapping in soft grass fabric. So the grass is a fabric, and the trees are a bandana around the head, and the swan is a bangle. You know, just all dressed up in all of this imagery is just such a fascinating direction to take this. And then, you know, blessed by a cameo memory of my family. So, like, to see your family just momentarily, in a moment, unlocking the door to happiness, promising to take me home, makes me think that maybe the only family that is around anymore is memory. You know, like maybe it's reminiscing on happier times, to, you know, you're dressing up depression in all this pretty imagery, is kind of what it makes me think of. Because it even says dreams eagerly pack their bags, meaning they're going away, they're going somewhere, you know, in anticipation of nostalgia's first rays of sunshine, meaning it's dark, and nostalgia is like the only ray of light. There's only happy memories and not a happy present. I thought this was really interesting. It was very textured, very descriptive. I thought there was wonderful interpretations of making these visuals into, you know, an outfit for somebody, you know, to dress yourself up in a scene. I thought it was very creative, very interesting. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, it definitely is an interesting idea. I love the imagery and metaphors, the personification, you know, the interaction between light and dark and the way it dresses the nighttime up, blessed by a cameo memory of my family, unlocking the door to happiness, promising to take me home. A muddy mind is excited to accept the invitation. You know, I like how that speaks on the idea of wanting to go off into those dreams, you know, that bring back memories of loved ones. So beautiful, right, and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was wonderfully personified. I agree with you. Nice comment. What do we have up next?
All right, up next we have Behind Closed Eyes Only by Ben Hart. And go ahead, Babbler, and give that a read, please.
All right, Behind Closed Eyes Only by Ben Hart. The Wanderer and the Painter. In dreams, he traverses the blurred fields and does not ask for definition, nor look for footsteps in the dust. He knows where the yawing yields and will not wander where he must. Running in a ring of prayer, he calls the clearing. He does not mind the irony. He's just glad to have returned. And so in vain, he tries to save the vermin from following the musician down the highway to waking, just because it's the only way they trust, to lead them through the realm that lies behind closed eyes only. He is not lonely, because he is part of the blurred, and when the blaze takes hold, he doesn't hurt or pray for the rainfall, because he is part of the burning. Finally at one with something beautiful. And perhaps sleep is the only Dutch master of the brush we so gladly forgot in a rush every day again. The one whose work erases itself at the armistice of eyes opening and that first of living breaths running out the tunnel when handed back the reins. Vaguely immortalized in museums, we're almost unsure to ever have shared in dreams, the performer. And then you whispered in my ear the words that would seal my fate. I bet we could get to Memphis by the morning. And I knew in my heart, I knew I'd wake before we'd get there. And in my fury, I may have stolen my sister's semicolon, Cobain's Martin D18, and Robert Johnson's picking finger rhyme. But my benzene breathing, the depths of my eyes, and the bends of my spine, those are all sadly all mine. And because you were the one I was incapable of telling that I really tried without having something to show for it, I fought my hardest to stay asleep and keep my promise of never seeing Memphis in the morning. The mountain and the grain. I was once a mountain who gave himself away, a pebble a day, to the begging streams I called my bloodline, who lovingly took pieces of me. And I was glad that in their hands at least, I didn't seem so heavy, for they carried stones like seeds of the grapevine, further than I could have cast all of me, all the way. I was once a mountain who hated his every slope, and in my loving decay, I was able to create the shores of hope. End poem. Pam, what did you think?
Oh my goodness, this was beautiful and powerful. I've come to really enjoy and appreciate Ben's writing. Wonderful kind of a vignette-style poem, broke up into parts, strong imagery and metaphors. You know, I really like how, to me, this speaks on the idea of grief and wishing that you had, said some more to someone. You know, I kind of get the idea of life and death and loss, and and in my fury I may have stolen my sister's semicolon, Cobain Martin D18 and Robert Johnson's picking finger rhyme, but by benzene breathing the depths of my eyes and the bends of my spine, those are sadly all mine, and because you were the one I was incapable of telling. And I like how the semicolon speaks on the idea of a life put on pause. And, you know, it kind of speaks on the questioning of our actions and how they affect other people. I also really like part three where it says, I was once a mountain who gave himself away a pebble a day to the begging streams I called my bloodline. And I like how that represents the idea of sacrificing yourself one piece at a time to family, although it can, you know, because it says bloodline, but it can also be a sacrifice that you make to friends or to people or society in general, to where you really start to lose yourself. But, you know, to me that definitely speaks on the idea of how, you know, family has an expectation, you know,
And I think that not an expectation on the individual, but also a lot of times families have an expectation on children according to their birth order. Like, you know, this will be the oldest, what the oldest child is supposed to be like. This is what the youngest will be like, the middle one. You know, there's those expectations laid upon each one. And you end up sacrificing too much of yourself by trying to meet those. So powerful, emotive, right, and very well done.
Yeah, wonderful comment. Yeah, it's weird how expectations like that work, right? You know, like, I mean, my mom is certainly guilty of those things. And it's interesting because me and my siblings, at least the three of us that are close in age, you know, because I have older siblings too, but there's a significant age gap there. We oddly fit that birth order expectation thing, like, oddly well. It's weird how that works, right? But not without cost. You know, there's downsides to that. I enjoyed this a lot. You know, the first part, you know, the wanderer and painter, you know, it's like living in this dream, living in this surreal, like, happiness kind of thing. And yet seeing things going awry, you know, trying to save the vermin from following the musician down the hallway, down the highway to waking, you know, seeing that essentially there's like this dreamland Pied Piper that's pulling everyone. And yet it still feels so dreamlike, you know, so it's vain to try to stop anything. You know, things are just kind of going the way that they're going. You know, he doesn't hurt or pray for the rainfall because he is part of the burning, you know. Nothing really feels wrong. Everything just feels, you know, kind of oddly perfect. It's kind of how I took this first portion of the piece, you know, vaguely immortalized in museums, we're almost unsure to have ever shared in dreams. You know, it feels like too good to be true. And yet there's warning signs, but you didn't recognize them at the time to be warning signs. Just kind of went with the flow. And then in the second part, like the performer, you know, I bet we could get to Memphis by the morning. And it's still like a dream, but now there's this negativity to it. You know, there's this struggle, the wanting to stay in the dream when reality is slapping you in the face. You know, it's like the wake-up call, kind of is how this middle section reads to mine. And when I read, and in my fury, I may have stolen my sister's semicolon, I think of semicolon as like the symbol for attempted suicide, you know, and how life continued on, and how your sister had one but doesn't anymore, you know, is like, you know, she die. And that you continue living, you know, and how hard that would be. You know, there's survivor's guilt is a thing. And so that's what it makes me think of, is survivor's guilt. You know, and trying really hard to keep your head above water, to keep positive, to keep the dream going, you know, to stay asleep and keep my promise of never seeing Memphis in the morning. And then I get to the last one, is the mountain and the grain. You know, and feel like, you know, at one point you were falling apart, you know, little by little, but then to find that children or, you know, progeny of some kind have kind of taken the little pebbles and the little pieces that have washed away that felt like made you feel lighter, not so heavy. You know, I was glad that in their hands, at least, I didn't seem so heavy, for they carried stones like seeds of the grapevine further than I could have cast. You know, to pull you into something lighter, to make you feel lighter, to give you purpose, you know, and in my loving decay was able to create the shores of hope. You know, who've gone through like this hardship and this loss of dream and of this, you know, wake up call, to find redemption at the end, you know, gives it a positive spin. But I enjoyed this. I thought it was a really great three-part tale. It feels, you know, surreal and very metaphorical, but I enjoyed it. So thank you, Ben.
What? Absolutely. All right, let's see what we got next. The question is, did I grab the next one? Yes, I did. All right.
I'm not freezing, even you.
All right. Up next, we have Dreams of the Insomniac by G.A. Grimm. And we do have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
Dreams of the Insomniac by G.A. Grimm. I visit things transpired, wounds witnessed, birthplace of scars, not always mine. Repeating moments, but being gifted with better answers. Letting go of a wish long carried that will never be truth, knowing a lie without its weight. Of reaching in this world of angles, satisfaction, even though I walk straight lines. Finding focus in these nights of slumber, armed only with my shotgun thoughts. One day subduing and dragging it into my hours of light. Of finally figuring out just who I am supposed to be, but this place keeps its secrets. Perhaps it is there I will be found in this world of wishes, dreaming of the day I awake.
Excellent, SoundCloud. Thank you, G.A. Grimm. I always enjoy SoundClouds. There's just something about hearing a piece in the author's voice that I think just gives it so much extra weight. I really enjoyed this write, you know, Dreams of the Insomniac. You know, what does a person who can't sleep dream of? It's such a great concept to start with. And then I like where this goes. You know, I visit things transpired, wounds witnessed, birthplace of scars, not always mine. You know, someone who can't sleep thinking about all of the shit they've been through, you know, all of the things that have happened. And sometimes it's the stupidest stuff too, right? Like you think about like every time in your life that you've ever felt guilty, like weird things that are like mess ups that you did as a kid that you should be over by now but aren't, you know, like all of these different things, and then sometimes more serious, but you know, just all the mistakes you've made in life. It's weird how those things come up when you're sitting there like trying to sleep and you can't. And then I enjoyed repeating moments, but being gifted with better answers, letting go of a wish long carried that will never be truth, you know, to in the midst of revisiting all of these things, managing to find better answers for things and being able to let go. So it's not just pointless, you know, reliving horrible memories. It's also finding, you know, answers and meanings in the revisiting, you know, revisiting with a purpose, with an outcome, and how nicely fruitful is that, right? And then I also really liked finding focus in these nights of slumber, armed only with my shotgun thoughts, one day subduing and dragging it into my hours of light. You know, to have this focus, this laser focus as you're laying there trying to go to bed, and the idea of that as a shotgun thought, you know, just being able to shoot down ideas and view things like this powerful precision that you can't at other times of the day. You know, when you're sitting there trying to actually get shit done, you've got no focus. But when you're sitting there laying at the ceiling at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can, you know, all of your thoughts magically come together. It's weird how it works like that sometimes. But I love that the fantasy is like shooting down these good ideas and shooting down these actions and like dragging it into daylight. Like, yeah, we're going to be this focused in the daytime, Kay. But I also like finally figuring out just who I'm supposed to be, for this place keeps its secrets. Perhaps it is there that I will be found in this world of wishes, dreaming of the day I awake. To me, that says, you know, the dream is to find purpose in your life, to find out who it is that you're supposed to be and take that out of a dreamland and into reality. That being the day that you wake and the dream version of self becomes reality.
I really enjoyed this ride. I thought it was really well done. I personally found it very relatable, and I loved some of the word choices. I particularly liked the idea of shotgun thoughts, you know, like skeet shooting your dreams. That aren't really dreams. They're like daydreams that happen at night because you're not actually asleep. So I really enjoyed this. I thought this was well done and a great thought. Cam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I did like this one too, and I like how it speaks on the idea of how the mind is oftentimes more focused at nighttime and how it's not always easy to bring that into the daylight. And I thought there was such a nice layered feel to that end line and that idea of not only waking up the next day, but as you are saying, the idea of becoming that enlightened person, that person who finds their purpose. I really like I walk straight lines, finding focus in these nights of slumber, armed only with my shotgun thoughts, one day subduing and dragging it into my hours of light. And I think many of us kind of hope for that same thing. And I just love the imagery in that. Excellent write, great sound cloud, and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wonderful imagery in here. And yeah, I agree with it. Can we please move this focus into some of the daytime hours where I can, you know, do stuff with it?
Right.
Thanks.
Rarely happens for me, but...
But my boss would appreciate.
Yeah, right. If only we got paid for being productive in our dreams, I'd be making big money.
Me too. I guess I should probably sleep more if that's the case, though.
Like, yeah, right.
Anyway, where are we off to, Pam?
Up next, we have White Spaces by Kiku, and it goes like this. My poems have become emaciated. I am but a butcher, carving every line, thin and knife-tongued, shaving down each tendon I have until it is white, naked and naked, frosted marrow, pink sponge, but can we really call it courage if I am only ambiguously honest? There are seeds in my throat that have yet to bloom, its scentless petals, the pastel milkweeds from a chartreuse vase. My feet are tucked under the pillows, body covered by white sheets formed like fresh snow, where dreams gallop uninterrupted with nightfall, and the only sound of morning is your sable voice. I awaken, desperate to find the rhythm in my legs, again to the heavy silence of this house, the mottled tile beneath my soles. It is okay to say goodbye, but love, don't change the way you look at me. Know that there is not a thing between something and nothing and poem.
Great read, Pam. Really interesting piece from Keiku. I love the idea. The word choice in here is excellent, and it's so image heavy and so textural. My poems have become emaciated, you know, like starved poetry, bare bones poetry, which I think in some ways is good poetry. You know, if you can bring it down to the bare bones, you know, not a lot of extra fluff, just because, you know, carving every line thin and knife-tongued, shaving down each tendon I have until it is white and naked. It's such a visceral language, you know, talking about like this deep level of exposed. But then it goes, can we really call it courage if I am only ambiguously honest? And I relate to that on many levels. You know,
most of my poems are related, you know, some kind of honesty. They say something about me and about my experience, because I feel like that's what I can write about the best, you know, is who I am and things I've undergone. But there are sometimes like twists in there. There are artistic licenses in there that don't necessarily, you know, it's not like everything I write is like 100% fact, for a multitude of reasons. I think it was earlier today that, or maybe it was yesterday, a poem of mine that I wrote, I think you might have even read it, poem, Pam, the substitute poem. Like, there are nuggets of truth in there, but that's not, like, the 100% level of my experience. Like, that's not, like, verbatim the instance, you know? Like, it was inspired by a piece of art, but that doesn't mean there aren't pieces of me in there, you know? Because I write largely about my own experience, but it doesn't make it 100% factual. So I really loved that line, you know, ambiguously honest. Because I feel like that's a lot of how my poetry comes out. You know, it is mostly true, but partly fiction. Partly embellishment, partly a lens. And so I really like that. It's like ambiguously naked. You know, it's like, you know, when they blur nudity. So sensor bars, but not quite. It's really kind of more of that frosted glass effect, I think. You know, there are seeds in my throat that have yet to bloom, which to me is, you know, things I still want to say, things I still want to share, but just aren't ready to come to fruition yet. You know, but to describe them as scentless petals, the pastel milkweeds from a chartreuse vase, you know, just like, it paints such a beautiful imagery of it. It's such a wonderful way to say, you know, poems I've yet to write, ideas I've yet to express. You know, where dreams gallop uninterrupted with nightfall and the only sound of morning is your sable voice. Makes this feel a little bit more intimate, you know. All of these naked truths that you want to say and will come eventually, but at the moment, there's just kind of this intimacy happening here. You know, I awaken desperate to find the rhythm in my legs, again to the heavy silence of this house, the mottled tile beneath my soles. It is okay to say goodbye, but love, don't change the way you look at me. You know, this ending of sorts, to enjoy this momentary intimacy and hope that it doesn't change, you know, to still want to be seen the way that you're currently seen, to be interpreted the way that you're currently interpreted. And I think it's related to, you know, truths that haven't been spoken yet, things that have been ambiguous. To lay yourself bare, you know, the risk there is of being rejected. You know, to want to say and express these things, but not want the other person to see you differently. You know, and I've definitely had that experience as well, you know, to not want to share things because you don't want to be viewed in the light of your failures. So, or things that you view as your own shortcoming. So I really liked this. I loved the language. It felt very visceral, very raw. You know, when I read like white spaces, it's, you know, like those between the lines, the things unsaid. So I thought this was a really well done piece of poetry. Your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is stunning. It's got amazing imagery and metaphors. I really like, first of all, how she chose to title this White Spaces and then write it in such a way that there, in the body of the poem, there isn't any spacing. And I think that it works very efficiently for the message that she's getting across of how sometimes, you know, people need to read between the lines, and yet we don't necessarily want to, you know, provide that extra space for them. We don't want to, as you said, expose too much of ourselves. I really liked that imagery and metaphors, and there are seeds in my throat that have yet to bloom. You know, that idea of those words, those things yet unspoken. And I awaken desperate to find the rhythm in my legs again to the heavy silence of this house, the mottled tile beneath my soles. It is okay to say goodbye, but love, don't change the way you look at me. And I like how that those lines speak on the idea of moving on, you know, and so just a beautiful write and very well done.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. It is just like softly raw. You know, I like that piece very much. Where are we off to now, Pam?
All right. Up next, we have Lucid Liberty by Greg Gall. And go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Mm-hmm. Lucid Liberty by Greg Gall. What does she see in this tour path puddle? It is her mother's longing, lucid dream, shimmering shadows that are so subtle, fading liberty hopes that she has seen, an aspiration of just what might be openly revealed on a brick walkway, a watery wish this lone child can see, sparking a lifelong quest for her today. She surely has the right to liberty. Even blind bigots can't deny her that. Diverse people strive for their dignity, yet may fall prey to cruel caveat. Traipsing timidly through these near narrows, remembering rainbows can't cast dark shadows. End poem. Pam, what'd you think?
Great read. I really like this. I like how it speaks on the ideas of the dream of a child. But you know, it's interesting to me how the first part mentions the idea of the mother's dreams. It is, what does she see in this tour path puddle? It is her mother's longing, lucid dream. And I think that can come across as both a positive and a negative. You know, it can be a positive in the idea of a mother, grandmother, you know, a maternal figure supporting a child's dream. But it can also be that idea of I didn't, you know, almost that pressure of I didn't make it as far as I wanted to with my life. So now I'm putting all this weight on you to be better than I am, more successful than I am. And these are my dreams. And so, you know, I kind of see that in a twofold way, which, you know, makes it interesting to me. But I like how this speaks on the idea of the right to, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and how we all have that right to pursue our dreams, you know, and a really great social commentary in the line, she surely has a right to liberty, even blind bigots can't deny her that, diverse people strive for their dignity, yet may fall prey to cruel caveats. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Yeah, I like what you're saying about how it's her mother's dream. So I also found that interesting. You know, my first impression of that line was, you know, her mother's dream is for her to have freedom to be, you know, be able to pursue her dream. But then it's also, you know, a mother's dream is to become something, and maybe that didn't happen. And that's why it's a shimmering shadow that is subtle and fading liberty hopes. You know, the fact that mom's dream is dying, you know, and there's sadness in that, you know, the fact that the previous generation didn't make it as far as they would have liked, you know, and yet opening new roads and making it possible for hopefully the next generation to do better. You know, traipsing timidly through these near narrows, remembering rainbows can't cast dark shadows. You know, they're still near narrows, you know, trying to get through like this gap, the small gap of being successful. You know, it's almost like a tight walk rope, you know, and that dreams can't be bad things. I thought it was a really fascinating concept here.
it makes me think too about what happens to a lot of mothers, in my opinion. You know, I have a lot of friends who have children, and a lot of times they don't take excellent care of themselves. You know, once there's a child, it becomes about supporting the dreams and wants and needs of that child. And that's not a bad thing. I think that's just like an instinctual thing. I think that's just part of being a parent. But, you know, sometimes when Mother's Day is rolled around or my friend's birthdays or things like that, you know, I say like, well, what would you want for your kid? You know, would you, do you want your child when she has children to give up on everything that she wanted and just raise her kid? And it's like, if your answer to that is no, then, you know, remember that you're somebody's child. You know, just because you have children doesn't make you less of a person or make your dreams less valid or less worthy of achieving. You know, save yourself a seat at the table. So it's just a thought that I sometimes have when I watch my friends with their kids. You know, I don't remember a whole lot of them growing up being like, my dream is to be a mom. You know, like, not that there's anything right. wrong with that. Like, if that's your dream, go for it. Okay. But that's not what I recall. You know? So, you know, life doesn't stop. So you can't put yourself on the back burner like that. You know, don't forget that you were somebody's child too. But I really enjoyed this. Great, right? We have 4 minutes left. I don't know if we've got a shorty tucked in there somewhere that we want to give a quick read.
Yeah, I think I can do that. I will go ahead and put up The Dream by Marius Alexandru. And it goes like this. The blaze of fires lighting the scene again calls you out to a new adventure. With the window open, you can hear the rain, a cup of eternal love and pleasure. Barefoot, you are dancing in the gentle, idle wind, holding hands with unseen angels, a romantic waltz, a joyful vine, a blessing for the eyes of strangers. Bathed in the brilliant colored rays, your smile gives us hope and confidence in a better world for the future days, a world of love and innocence. Broken glass in the middle of the night, the music suddenly disappeared and everything is gone in the light. It was a dream, just as I feared. End poem.
Great read, Pam. What a heartbreaking write. You know, this wonderful dream that almost feels like a party or a wedding or, you know, something wonderful, you know, like a couple, you know, dancing in the wind and enjoying a romantic waltz and these birds and everything is singing and beautiful. And then in the middle of the night, there's a broken glass and the music stops. You know, I almost picture like a record, like, you know, like stop. And everything just kind of comes crashing down, you know, just smacked in the face with dreams not coming together as you'd like. It's a devastating poem, but the setup is really well done. You don't really see that turn coming until that last stanza. So this is a really great write from Marius. It sets a wonderful atmosphere that then works nicely into the last one. Hopefully not everything came to a screeching halt, but sounds, you know, momentarily at least not good. Your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, this is a beautiful and emotive write, a wonderful flow of imagery. I like how you mentioned it kind of has a feel of like a wedding. I kind of thought also the idea of watching a child dance in the rain, but whatever it was supposed to convey, you're so caught up in the beauty of the moment. And then, like you said, that screeching record feel, that, you know, that imagery of the broken glass in the middle of the night, the music suddenly disappeared. It's almost like there's this idea of joyfulness and innocence in the first three stanzas, and then all of a sudden it just all comes to a halt, and, you know, life takes this dark turn. So excellent write, powerful emotional impact, and very well done. And great show tonight, Babbler.
Yes, thanks, Pam, for filling in hopefully Faziana is back next week. Keep an eye out for more contests, and we'll definitely have carryovers from this one for next week. So thanks for joining, everybody. Have a wonderful night.